are listening to the Beyond the Dress Size podcast with Dr. Ezine Meribe, where my goal is to empower you to own and love your body and live in it fabulously. See, I find that when women embrace healthy lifestyle practices as a powerful form of luxurious self-care, we take better care of ourselves beyond the number on the scale, the dress label, or the tape. And to be honest with you, that's the most peaceful way to lose weight, be in a better state of health, and function at your highest capacity. The first series of Beyond the Dress Size podcast is focused on the most important component of life beyond the dress size, which is our bodies. Now, if this is your first time listening to this podcast, I want you to go back to our previous episode, the introduction episode, where we talked about why we chose the name Beyond the Dress Size. You know, too often we tend to treat our bodies as if it were a different entity, as if it was something that needed fixing so we can finally live our lives. This is no thanks to all the messages we receive from the society and the media. What we now fail to realize is that our bodies and whatever messages we send to our bodies permeates every other aspect of our lives, especially our self-esteem as women, because of course, we are our bodies. We are no different from our bodies. In this series, we will explore body diversity, the concept that different bodies of this world come in different shapes and sizes, the appreciation of our bodies and that of others, and how we can approach our bodies with kindness and compassion. Most importantly, to stand tall as we redefine what beauty means to us. In essence, her beauty is not your beauty, but we can all coexist in the same space. Now, I know that every woman deserves her own cheerleading squad. So of course, if you would like to have your own personal cheerleading squad, come into our Facebook group, Healthy Yummy Mummies, and let's connect with you and let me connect with you. I want to share with you guys what I'm crushing on this week. So as I was spending my evening last night on Bella Niger, I saw that Tools Oniru just launched a shapewear line for women in bigger bodies, and I was really, really excited because over time, we all know that fashion companies focus on those in smaller bodies, you know, and people in bigger bodies just tend to get the plain Janes, nothing fabulous. But hey, here's one woman saying, I want women in bigger bodies to look and feel fabulous, and I'm really excited for it. So you guys go check it out. It's called, the brand is Sablier, and that's the French word for hourglass. Go check it out, give her a shout out, and of course, place an order. All right. So on today's podcast, I have a colleague and schoolmate, Dr. Nneka Chima, and we talk about, can we all be a size six? You know, over time, a lot of weight loss companies have used the concept of BMI to terrorize us, to threaten us, to make us feel a certain way, to make us dress and look a certain way, to make us feel like we needed to, you know, be a certain way to be complete, to be enough. But we are changing the narrative. We're shaking the table, like we say in the Nigerian parlance. We're shaking that table. Have you ever considered that the same BMI chart is used for both male and females, even though we know that men and women are different physiologically? Have you ever considered that BMI is not the only accurate measure of health and body fat? What other things should we be checking out? I want you to reclaim your health and reclaim the time that you have spent pursuing misconceptions, to question everything that comes your way, and you know, don't rely on Dr. Social Media or Dr. Google. Ask the right questions and be properly informed, because education is power. So the aim of this podcast is to educate you, reorientate you, so that you can unlearn, relearn, and learn. So let's dive into what we have today before I spill all the potatoes. Nneka Chima is a physician and public health expert. She received her MBBS from the University of Nigeria and holds an MPH in community health practice with a nutrition concentration from the University of Texas School of Public Health. She is a nutrition, gender equality, and women's health enthusiast with a fair dose of interest in parenting practices. She's also intrigued by culture and cultural transitions and has lived among several communities in her mind's eye. Combining her education and interests, Nneka has worked on public health projects with other populations of women, helping them make beneficial lifestyle and behavioral modifications. When she is not combing recipes, poring over cultures on Google, or introspecting over classic songs, she's spending time with her family. Nneka is attentive and enjoys supporting other women. She's currently collaborating with Zini's Lifestyle on some nutrition projects. You can reach her on LinkedIn as Nneka Chima. Now let's get into the episode. I know you would love it.
Hey, Emeka. Thank you for coming on the show. So, we're talking about can we all be a size 6? And basically, we're going to be exchanging ideas. The idea is to offer a very balanced conversation and hope that people learn what the truth is, because I'm worried about the fact that there's a lot of misconception out there about what our bodies should look like and completely ignoring the concept of body diversity. Also, that BMI is not just a marker of, it's not an absolute indicator of who is fat or who is not fat or who needs to jump on a treadmill and turn their head upside down, you know. And it's even worse now because there's a lot of pressure from the media, and the pressure from the media telling us what we need to look like and what we don't need to look like. So I'm glad we're having this conversation. So for a start, I think I want to talk about the concept of sizeism. Sizeism is the fact that people are discriminated against based on their size. And this leads to a lot of stigmatization. Because of course, where there's discrimination, there will also be stigmatization. And for the purpose of this conversation, I want people to realize that fat is an adjective, just like we have the word tall, the word short, and the word thin. They're all adjectives. They're not meant to be trigger words, and it's not meant to upset anyone. Okay, so I'd like you to talk about BMI, what BMI is, and okay, I'll let you define BMI first.
Thank you, Zini, for having me on the show. It's my pleasure working with you on this project. BMI is simply a formula that was devised to calculate people's, an estimate of fat or some close estimate of how fat you are or how healthy, in quotes, a person should be. So it uses your weight against your height to get a number which is, you know, put a number which is compared to some sort of gradation they already have in place. Whereby if you are below 18.0, I think, then you are considered underweight. For 18.5, I believe, rather, you're considered underweight. And if you're between 18.5 to 24.9, it's considered normal. Mm-hmm. And then between 25, I think, to 30 is considered overweight. And above 30 is considered obese.
Okay. But the problem the BMI has that people don't really know, because this is the concept here, is to educate people and empower people to know better so that we are not overburdened by what our BMI looks like or does not look like, and also tell you what is it that you should be focusing on. So the problem with the BMI was, first of all, it was developed in, I think, about the 1830s. The idea was just to check a particular group of people and not necessarily to use it for the whole world, right? Considering that there's a lot of diversity when you start transcending borders, nations, and countries. So BMI would only measure your weight against your height. It never considers the fact that somebody may have more lean mass than more body fat, and somebody may have very little body fat, and all that weight is just lean mass. So it does not take that into account. And BMI fails, like it fails the test for body, for who is fat and who is not fat. When a person is overweight, that's in the overweight range, which is the 25 to 30, right? And it doesn't work. It also does not work or account for anything when the person is athletic, when the person is a bodybuilder, and I believe in the elderly. So why then do we continue to push people? Because I think that what happens when we continue to pressurize people based on BMI is the fact that people become, even people who are not necessarily unhealthy, become unnecessarily anxious. And I feel there's a lot of mental pressure on people to, you know, reduce themselves, become thin. So what else is important? What else should we be looking out for when now that we know that BMI is not the only thing?
All you've said is right, as far as facts, as far as research-based, right? Mm. Research, information, and everything. And one thing that I also found amazing is that BMI, it seems like we use the same, not it seems like, as a matter of fact, we use the same calculation for both males and females. Mm-hmm. How does that even make scientific sense, when we do, you know, when even in physiology, in pathology, we always know that there are differences as far as genders. Do you understand? So yes. It goes to point the fact that there's a problem with BMI. And then who even set these limits in the first place? Who decided, you know, that it has to be between this and this? And what were the factors that made them make those decisions as far as the range? Well, even as much as we, you know, we acknowledge that these are the, all of these are facts and we have to question all of this. And I believe people are already asking all these questions and coming up with other ideas, just like you are doing. Mm-hmm. I still, you know, it's still also necessary to understand and appreciate the fact that BMI might be the easiest and most accessible tool people in certain places may have. That's because what should be, you know, what should be the standard, like calipers, like fat, you know, all of those other methods of determining body fat, impedance assessment tools and stuff. Available in some
communities. In regular settings, yeah.
But you asked the question, you said, what other factors should we be looking at? There's something called waist-to-hip ratio that mm-hmm. we don't see a lot, especially where we both you and I come from. You know, mm-hmm. BMI is more pronounced and more popular in where we come from, you know, but waist-to-hip ratio is also a good indicator, you know, if not a better indicator, that there's a problem. You know, maybe you're adding a lot of fat around mm-hmm. your mid region. You should be concerned about that. And then also, if you like, you're leading a sedentary lifestyle, that is something that should bother you also. Are you sitting for prolonged periods, maybe even at your work desk or at home on TV or whatever it is? That should also concern you. And do you get breathless on mild exercise? Maybe you merely climb a flight of stairs and then you get breathless. That should also, you know, make you worried, make anyone worried. You know, all of these are things that when you experience them or if you have a problem, a challenge with any of these things, it should be a red flag for you and you should begin to think, what do I do about my, maybe I'm actually adding a lot of weight.
Okay. Let me now make it very clear. So if two people have a BMI of 25, one person may actually be all lean muscle mass. The other person may actually be all fat. Do you understand? Or have more fat. But nobody differentiates between the person who is 25 and the person who is 20, the other person who is 25. That we can't completely differentiate and say this person is healthier and this person is not healthier. So that, like Neka has just mentioned, it's much better to pursue other indicators of health and say, okay, what's my waist to hip ratio? What is my waist circumference? When people rely a lot on BMI, we actually miss out on people who could benefit from health interventions this way, based on the analogy that two people may actually be 25 or 26, but one person is technically or medically healthier than the other person. Okay.
True.
So while we're saying, okay, so check your waist to hip ratio, check your waist circumference, the point we're trying to make is don't look at any person and say, oh, she's fat. That means she's unhealthy. That means she's lazy. I truly get irritated when I see people who are in bigger bodies that are in movies and allow themselves to be used in such movies where they are depicted as being lazy, as being not beautiful, not fitting the norm of who should be talked to or who should be someone's friend. What other stigmatizations have I seen of fat people? They are non-entities. They are not really smart people. All they do is eat. All they think about is eat. And more, I'm seeing this representation in movies. And it's not even good for, it's neither good for our children who are watching these movies. It's not good for children growing up. It's a mixed message in the society is, or the media is feeding us with. So I recently learned of a child that said her tummy was growing big and she doesn't want to be eating anymore, right? And someone said, her mom asked, okay, why do you think so? She said, oh, that she watched this cartoon and everybody was making fun of the daddy in the cartoon because his tummy was big. And so she doesn't want to be eating anymore because her tummy is big. You know, so it brings my attention to the fact that children are receiving these messages even from a young age. And we're even teaching our children to taunt people who are in bigger bodies.
Yeah. Have you heard about the funny statement that you can only be big and cute till a certain age?
Like, are you serious?
Yes, I've heard people say that, like, you're big, like, for a child who is six or below, a cousin or a niece or an aunt will come and be like,
oh my God, you're so big.
That's supposed to be cute, right? But if that child crosses the age of maybe six, seven, that does not, it's no longer a compliment. It automatically changes from compliment to something else, you know? So it's absolutely right to say that people who are fat, being an adjective right now.
Yes.
People who, you know, fat are considered, are discriminated. Even like, I think also that they might be over-treated. Over-treated in a sense.
Yes. I totally agree with you.
They might be over-treated because you find some physicians who are, you know, automatically they see someone who is on the big side or someone who has a high BMI and then automatically switch into treatment mode. Oh, this is what you have, what you have to do. And that might actually make us neglect people who are skinny that might be unhealthy. So we miss them out. They miss out rather from treatments that they might be benefit from. And then we spend all the resources on people who do not necessarily need it. That doesn't mean that we should not, I mean, that doesn't mean that there are no people who are big or fat. Okay, now I'm careful to say the word fat because I don't want to offend it. But that doesn't mean that there are no people who are big that might require, might need treatment or interventions of any kind.
Yes.
But we should, what we're saying is we should treat people based on, as individuals, do you understand? We should assess people as individuals, fat, thin, whatever, look at them. Are you, someone can be skinny and not be getting enough exercise. They might be skinny and not fit, do you understand? Because it depends on their body fat distribution and how much activity they impute into their every day. So, you know, so yeah, the discrimination is real. Even not just in the media or in the movie industry, but also amongst us who are practicing healthcare workers. So we should be careful about that. And even like something, this might, I mean, it's not research based or anything, this is just coming from my head. Even as far as public health programs that we do, some projects are targeted and say obesity prevention project. They're trying to recruit people, right? Mm. It automatically discriminates them. I don't know, if I was obese, I may not want to join such a program because, you know, it will not in any way strengthen how I feel about myself.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll probably join a program that says health promotion, something, or something health, a lifestyle improvement, whatever, then join a program that says obesity prevention. You know, I wouldn't want to sign up for that.
So now that you mentioned medical stigmatization, what this does is that people who are in bigger bodies who actually need health interventions are afraid to go into the hospital because they know that once you come in, the first thing everybody is going to tell you that it's because of your size. So even when they would actually benefit, it reduces their willingness to come into the hospital. It reduces their social activities because they feel, you know how people are going on a morning run and everybody's going on a morning run and someone in a bigger size body is getting lots of catcalls from people. First of all, I'm going on a morning run, which means that I am interested in taking care of my health and wellness. Why then am I being attacked for even making an attempt?
Yeah.
It's really, really sad. And not only are we marginalizing them, we're abusing them. And if you look at teenagers now, a lot of teenagers are being abused for their bodies. And the funny thing about sizism is, in as much as sizism may look like, oh, it's people who are in bigger bodies that suffer sizism, people who are in thinner bodies also suffer some degree of sizism.
You want me to tell you about that? Yes. Like, I think it was you I was telling that it feels like I have lived in two different lifetimes, you know, in my life. Because as a teenager growing up in Nigeria, I mean, you knew me from med school. I was skinny, you know, skinny. And I didn't like it. And I didn't like it simply because of the society around me, because the society made it clear to me that they wanted someone who wasn't as skinny as I was at that time when I was growing up. Okay, that's fine. I looked forward to people who would say things like, oh, the moment you have a child, you're going to add some flesh, you would add some weight. And so even as a child, as a teenage child, I looked forward to adding some flesh after pregnancy. No, but it's true. Fast forward to coming to America. I didn't have a child before I came to America, so I was still skinny, right?
Yeah.
But then I came to work, and then I get compliments. People are like, oh, my God, you're so skinny. And I heard I was skinny. I think it was after I had my first child, Olenna. My colleague, you know, someone in the office, she called me and said, oh, my God, what is your trick? How do you remain so skinny? By then, I'd put on some weight. You can imagine, like a little bit of flesh. No, it wasn't big by any standard, but I put on a little bit of flesh compared to how I was back in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, my God, how do you keep so skinny? And I flinched. I flinched because I wasn't familiar with skinny being a compliment. She had to explain that skinny was a compliment because it was a cultural shock to me. And suddenly I realized, oh my God, I'm the best thing since sliced bread in this America. You know? And you know, now let's extend it, let's take it away from me. You look around you, you see, even in Nigeria, where I'm coming from, where we both came from, you see that skinny is now becoming something beautiful.
Yes.
And now, and in America, now in America, you see that there's this new wave, this new movement towards women who have thick thighs.
Yeah.
So the idea of beauty is changing, especially with the Kardashians. You know, now women would fancy having thick thighs and big butts. Yes, with a thinner midriff. The standard of beauty is changing every day. It's evolving. So it will hurt you as a person, and I'm telling you from a personal point of view, it will hurt anyone to base your stand, your self-esteem or your feeling of feeling beautiful on the media or what people think.
So that brings me to thin privilege. Now, thin privilege means that people who are in thinner bodies get benefits. So let's say two people walk into a restaurant, right? And one is in a bigger body and the other one is in a thinner body. 99% of the time, most people would flock towards the lady in the thinner body because, oh, she must be smart, she takes care of herself, and she looks good, in inverted commas. She looks good. And then every other person looks at the one who came to the restaurant to have lunch. She's hungry. And everybody starts looking at her like, huh, so you're still eating. Like, excuse me, you're supposed to be starving. Do you understand? And we don't even know how damaging this thing is to women. And then sometimes too, the people in thinner bodies are considered as, ah, look at how you are. I think in Nigeria, we say you look like bonga fish. Do you eat at all? So there's a lot of pressure from both ends. Whether you're thin, you would not satisfy anybody. Whether you're in a bigger body, you will not satisfy anybody. So what I want to encourage us as women to do is, like you said, your standard of beauty is not dependent on anybody. You need to appreciate the fact that bodies from all over the world, I think if we do like a catalog of bodies from different parts of the world, we're going to realize that there are different body sizes, which is a concept of body diversity. And one other thing, when you were telling your story, you also reminded me of the fact that someone like you now will probably be on social media and be saying, oh, look at me, people, I snapped back. Can you do this like I did it? It took me 6 weeks, I snapped back. And everybody's like, oh my God, I want to snap back. I'm like, oh, good Lord, help us. Because like you said, the media, okay, think about it. About 100 years ago, a beautiful woman was one who was plump and had good chin, had lots of fat in her cheeks, right? And at that point, people in smaller bodies were now viewed as poor people or they had a disease.
Then we have fat.
Yes, even in Nigeria, we have fattening rooms. Like, you must be prepared to show that you are. Whether it's Oriakwa or Doziakwa, I don't know which one. So you have to look a certain way. You know, I think that even when I went back to Nigeria in 2015, I had lost weight then, And I didn't used to dress like, you know, I didn't used to dress very madamish. I was used to my jeans and t-shirt because that's what happens here. And I used to get a lot of, I don't know what is wrong with us as women. I used to get a lot of negative, negative vibes, basically, like, ah, that small girl, you know. And I'm like, hey, I am somebody's mom now. What is wrong with you people? You know, but people always perceive that for you to be treated or properly accorded, you have to look a certain way. And what we don't even know is that because of industrialization and more access to food, everybody now was able to put on weight with ease. You didn't have to be affluent to be able to... you didn't have to be affluent to be in a bigger body. And the affluent people now looked at it and said, no, there had to be a distinction. We all can't look the same. And so that was when the pursuit of thinness became a big thing. And that's what people don't even know. So all of us are in this rat hole. We're pursuing something that some group of people who their soul is currently resting in peace, designed for us. So while we're at it, what we're saying is we should put more focus on health promotion for people of all sizes. It doesn't matter what type of body you are in. It doesn't matter if your BMI is currently 24. It doesn't matter if your BMI is currently 25. Health promotion activities or health promotion initiatives or health promotion interventions are for everybody. This involves having a more active lifestyle, paying attention to how you are feeding yourself. So in the second series of this podcast, we're going to be talking about nutrition. So we're going to help you sort that out. When people talk about health promotion, we don't realize that a lot of women have suffered body shame and weight stigma. I personally have always been in a bigger body, right? And I think that my pursuit of thinness started when I was a teenager because, which happens to every teenager. So you get to this point where puberty knocks on your door and you start blowing out in the right places because definitely you need a certain percentage of body fat, depending on who you are, to maintain your, to maintain that puberty, whatever that your body is embracing. And one thing people don't realize is when it comes to our bodies, our genetics are so important. Like for you now, Neka, I know that if I see your siblings, I'll know, all of you came from the same family. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So when people are complaining about the way their body is blooming, especially during puberty, it's important to look at your family members and see what they look like. I know that right now we're not feeding our children properly, so a lot of things are going on. But aside that, if you're taking care of your nutrition and you are moving your body in a way that feels good to you, because I find that when people think about physical activity, they cringe at the thought of physical activity, like, Jesus, I will die if I go there, you know? So it's not about, I tell people that most of the moves that you see people do were designed for bodybuilders. So that's why I always say move in a way that feels good to you. And what I was saying, when people think about health promotion, they think about it in terms of just food and fitness. But that's not all. There are lots of interventions like therapy, talking therapy, going to see a therapist, talk about, you know, emotional baggage that you are carrying. This is my personal opinion. I believe that if you actually want people to pursue health, you can't keep talking about food and fitness when people are carrying a lot of emotional baggage around that they need to drop, that they need to excavate. Other things may involve paying attention because, well, I think that this is a very big problem in Nigeria, paying attention to other metabolic indicators of good health. Many people don't even know what their blood pressure is today. Many people have never checked their blood pressure. Many people don't know what their fasting blood sugar is. I think I may have to put a lot of definitions on the website for this particular episode, and I'll put some beneficial links to so that you guys are not totally lost. But I usually don't want to extend this. So your lipid profile. So a lot of people know about it. Hey, they say I have cholesterol in my blood, but you don't even know what it means. You don't even know how often you're supposed to be checking it. What other health indicators, Neka?
Okay. I mean, those are the very basic ones that are not that are easiest to measure.
Yes.
You know, yeah.
and the ones everyone will have access to. But we don't even, you know, take that into cognizance. We're just pursuing thinness, in my opinion. Now, I want you to talk about, do you think that weight stigma or body shame has an impact on women in terms of our mental health, innovation, creativity, and, you know, achieving fulfillment, especially as women? Because, of course, someone who is in a bigger body is already being stigmatized at work and not getting the promotion or recognition that she deserves. So there's this book I read recently, not recently, but this year, and Things No One Should Tell a Fat Girl by Jess Baker. So I want you to share your own insights on the impact of weight stigma while I find that quote I really love.
Absolutely. I think that weight stigma is a problem. I mean, I already told you about my own experience.
Yes.
But I think for women who are on the fat side or bigger than I am, it's probably more of a problem for them. Because think about women, we already have a lot of burden, you know, to prove your enoughness, would I say, enough, to prove your worthiness. You already have to look a certain way. Your face has to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, Nigeria, you know, for so many of us in Nigeria, you want to be lighter skin. You
yes.
know, if you're dark, you need to be a certain kind of darkness, you know? And then you want your nose to be in a certain way. You want to, your mouth to be properly contoured. You know, you want to, your children to look a certain way. You're already worried that how do your in-laws perceive you? How do your family perceive you? Do they think you're a good wife? Do people think you're a good mother? And now in this age where women also have to make money, am I making enough money? There's a lot of pressure already for a woman. That's just the truth. And so being fat, or being discriminated as fat is adding insult to injury, if I have to say that. It's just like worsening the burden women already feel. So certainly it's a big problem. And certainly, like you said, health is holistic. Even WHO defines health as a holistic thing. It's not just a one-time thing. It's not a one, you don't pick one aspect of a person's life and think that that is health. Granted, I understand that projects are usually sponsored in piecemeal, but you know, when we discuss this thing, we should always remember to discuss it holistically, in the sense that it's not just about body weight. There's also other indicators. There's the mental side of health, which we often neglect in Nigeria. Do you understand? And then we talk a lot about comfort food. You see, people who do a public health project, some people don't eat comfort food, you know, don't just sit down, eat comfort food. And then they talk about people who are depressed, usually resorting to food.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? And in the process of saying all of those things, we forget but we fail to discuss the things that make them depressed in the first place, make them unhappy enough in the first place to the food. Do you understand? It's something that's eating the person up. And in the process of fixing that means that we need to discuss the mental side of it. We need to take mental health more seriously. There needs to be, you know, more discussion around discrimination, perception of body fat, discussion around making people feel comfortable in their size. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the listener to misunderstand me. What I'm saying is this, right? We understand that if someone is, there's a word, obesity is a word, we know that.
Mm-hmm.
Obesity is a medical term. We know that there's something called obesity, and we know that it has high risk. It has
correlation.
We know that. But I guess what I'm saying is this, right? If someone is, you know, if you make someone realize that you need to pursue good, better health for yourself, a healthy lifestyle. If you make it a holistic thing, I guess if somebody
and
with a good head on
size, their face, and not about size.
Yeah. Then they would, you know, like the person will pursue a healthy lifestyle, which eventually the person will lose dress sizes if they need to. They will go down dress sizes if they need to. And at the same time, be able to maintain the weight they lost.
Yes.
Because that's the problem with all of this fads. That's the problem with all this drug for losing weight and all of that. All of this keto diet or this diet or this diet. People do it, and yes, they probably would lose weight at that period they just started. But how do they maintain the weight? Do you understand? That is what a healthy lifestyle does for you. If you teach people that a healthy lifestyle, the pursuit of a healthy lifestyle is more important than weight, then people who are actually obese could or most likely wouldn't drop some sizes, right? Mm. And at the same time, it becomes a lifestyle, because it becomes a normal aspect of their life, and they'll be able to maintain it over time, which is more important.
Yes, I like that you brought this up, because first of all, promote health for everyone, irrelevant and regardless of size. That's one. Yeah. I would also need to educate the community, tell more people that, see, everybody deserves a right as much as you do to show up in this space. Whether they are in bigger bodies or not, it does not matter. People who want to cross the road to the other side are allowed to cross the road. Their size is irrelevant. People who want to shop for clothes, we'll talk about that in our next episode, should shop for whatever clothes they feel good to wear. We should stop putting clothes at a very limited, you know, number, because that's why I'm asking, can we all be a size 6? No, we can't. So make things accessible for everybody. The average American woman is a size 12, I think. That's the average dress size for an American. But most people, or most fashion labels, most fashion labels would only provide you with very limited sizes. And so
that's true.
That's ideal body image that the media keeps pouring in our faces, you know, trying to pressurize us with. They said, I read somewhere, and it's been quoted over time, that this body image that we see is only naturally available in 5% of American women. Now, I remember that the media from America has a lot of influence globally. So globally, women are being pressurized by something that can be attained by only 5% of the American population, that's American women. Which is really, really bad for us. Then you also talked about the fact that people who talk about health at every size will tell you that the idea behind the fact that, oh, so somebody lost weight and this happened, this transformation happened, let's say those metabolic indicators we discussed, they were now in a better shape of health. Being in a better shape of health is not necessarily as a result of any fad diet that you engage in. Being in a better shape of health happens because of the behaviors that you now adopt. The behavioral change is actually what brings about the better state of health. Not jumping from one soup to another pill, to another supplement. And studies have shown over time that when people jump from one fad diet to another, what happens, sadly so, is that you also increase your risk of these same diseases that they said obesity increases the risk for. I don't know if I made sense to you now. So it's the concept of weight cycling. The fact that today you're on this amazing liquid diet, that by the time you finish it, you're a size 0. And in the next 20 days, you are now a size 22, all the way from a size 0, because that was not sustainable. I heard someone say something. He says, if you're ever going to go on a, I hate to use the word diet, so I'm going to say, if you're ever going to go on a meal plan or a nutrition plan that says that you look at and you're honest with yourself and you know, I cannot sustain this for the rest of my life, it does not make sense going on it anyway. What's the point? Mm-hmm. You're only damaging yourself and your self-esteem, because I find that when women go through weight cycling procedures where I've tried to lose weight with this program, it didn't work. I jump on this one, it didn't work. I jump on that one, it didn't work. What happens is we diminish ourselves. We diminish our self-esteem. We keep questioning our capabilities, even though that when you look at other aspects of our lives, we're doing so well. But when it comes to this particular one, it feels like you're not enough. You're not strong enough. You're not disciplined enough. And this thing is not even about discipline. It's not about self-control. Because how can someone? Because I put up today, I said, How come that, despite the fact that there has been a lot of talk about dieting in the past couple of years, the obesity epidemic is still not coming down? And someone said, it's because it requires discipline. And I asked him, I said, so you're telling me that it requires discipline to continue on a starvation program? Do you understand? So what kind of discipline can someone engineer to be starving themselves for the rest of their lives?
That's an important question. I guess the point is for people to, you know, like to realize, I mean, right from primary school, we're taught about the six beneficial nutrients, right? Mm-hmm. The classes of food. Mm-hmm. And then as we advance education, we're taught about other micronutrients that we need and everything.
Yeah.
So I think the important thing is we should go back to the basics. People should go back to the basics.
I like that you said that.
Yeah. People should go back to the basics. You know, look at the food you're eating. Look at what you're eating. And if there's anything you know that is not healthy for you in any way, like maybe you eat a lot of junk and stuff like that, by you know, with your little education, mm-hmm. with your little education, looking at it, you know that this does not belong into what Uncle Tony taught you in primary four, in primary science. You know that. So take it out of your diet and then work on what you have. Look at what foods are available in your environment.
Environment. That's so important. Because
yeah,
I feel like we waste a lot of money that would have used for other beneficial things, trying to buy food naturally or readily available to us.
Exactly. So, you know, like, and if you're looking for food that in your environment is generally cheaper and you're going to get it generally more fresh than...
And actually more nutritious.
And more nutritious, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there are other things, you know, you could do from basic principles that you could do by yourself. Maybe, like, for some people, maybe you're always like binging on television shows and sitting down eating and not moving a lot. Do you understand? You don't need anyone to tell you that maybe you need to eat at a specific time with your family. Do you understand? I always talk about family eating time. That helps you cut down like that solo eating. And most times, the truth is most times when people are eating in front of the television is not fresh food that they are eating. They are eating chips. That's
something
actually the truth.
From the cupboard.
Yeah, so it takes you back to the basics. They're not eating healthy food. They're not eating fresh food and vegetables. They're eating chips. The basics, always go back to the basics. Always go back to the basics. And, you know, all that eating natural food, all that moving more. I know the times have changed because in the days of our parents, they all had to go to the farm, you know, and do a lot of physical activity. And so they didn't have to set up a certain time to go to the gym and everything. And with our generation, we don't actually also have to set a certain time to go to the gym. Mm. We don't have to do that either. But then we have to maybe be more intentional about our exercise, considering that many of us would do desk walks, you know, sitting on the desk, working on the computer. You have to be more intentional about it. Like remembering to maybe stand up every other hour or every 30 minutes or something and, you know, like move around. And then maybe instead of driving to the shop, maybe take a walk instead to the shop. Do you understand? Maybe instead of driving to the church that's just a mile away, maybe take a walk instead to the mile away. That way, it becomes part of your life instead of something that becomes a burden for you that you have to do at an extra time and makes it more difficult to achieve. And of course, group programs too. Like if you have a group of friends, just like you're doing, if you have a group of friends who want to exercise in the mornings, you understand? It could be fun too, like dancing with your friends in the morning. Maybe you have internet.
Community fitness programs have been shown to be very beneficial.
Exactly. Not only that are you exercising, you're also bonding with people.
Building connection, which is actually health promoting.
True. People would, that's the holistic aspect of health. Then you have people, you know, listening partners, people you can even talk about other things that don't necessarily have to do with health, with people you could talk about, maybe you're having issues with raising a child or something.
They actually
people
have that, to do with health, see?
Yes. So it's holistic, do you understand? And it's easier to build into your life doing that than following a particular fad or
regiment.
A particular supplement or food that you don't even know. You know, people in Nigeria don't realize that supplements in America are not actually they don't pass through the entire thing that drops. Do you understand?
Yes.
They don't get
on. I actually wrote an article on that last week, so I'm going to some of them actually produce in other countries for America.
They don't get that control, so we need to be careful about ingesting all of those things.
Okay, so let me read that. It said, consider that on an individual basis, when someone identifies a person as unworthy of acceptance, unattractive, less than intelligent, or deserving of invisibility, a significant disconnection occurs. prejudice, hatred, and injurious judgments often result from this type of interaction, followed with dehumanization. One individual then claims power over another by labeling that person, creating a false sense of superiority and distinguishing the other person's difference as an indication that he or she is less than. And he goes on then to say that, unfortunately, over time, the recipients of such messaging begin to accept this ideology. You see where I'm going? And then they feel unacceptable, mm-hmm. adopting behaviors that perpetuate this internalized oppression in their lives. They may begin to distrust themselves and their previous self-concept and even loathe themselves. The result is that people who are judged in this way unknowingly further fuel the power differential, which intensifies the dehumanization. So the thing is, sometimes we say, oh, of course I said she was lazy and then she acted lazy, but over time, when people receive this message of being lazy, of being unacceptable, of being unworthy of care and attention, they imbibe it and begin to live it out. So I think at this point, we can say that it's important for our growing children that we protect them from weight stigma and body shame. If you could talk to the people who, you know, stigmatized you back in the days, what would you tell them? What would you tell moms? Because one of the things that happens is when children taunt and stigmatize other children in school, they have not learned better from home.
Okay. Yeah. So if I could go back in time, I wouldn't just talk to the people. I'll talk to myself. I'll tell myself to ignore these people. I'll tell myself that these people are ignorant of whatever it is they are saying. I'll tell myself that my beauty is not dependent on their opinion about me, or it's not dependent on how much fat they think I should have on my body. And of course, to those people, I'll definitely let them understand that whatever it is they are thinking or saying to me should not be said to anyone, not just to me, but to anyone. No one deserves to hear such a thing. No one deserves to be pulled down in such a manner. No one deserves to be, you know, to be discriminated or to hear things that make them feel less of themselves.
Less. Yes. Yes. So, and then for moms, I would say, when you see people being taunted or stigmatized and you're with your child, it's important to show the child how important it is to speak up for that person immediately. Even if it's happening on TV, even if it's happening at a social gathering, it's so important. And when your children come back and tell you things that discriminating against someone's body, it's an opportunity for a conversation and to educate those children. Because like you said, women have a lot of pressure that we're going through. And if we let these things continue, we diminish ourselves and the amazing things that we can bring to this world. And I would also say that a lot of adolescents now, I think that if I remember correctly, discrimination based on body size ranks higher than discrimination based on race for adolescents. So I'm being someone who has been an adolescent and went through, you know, the sizeism, very high degree of sizeism, if I must say so myself. I think that is so important that as moms, as teachers, as uncles and aunties, as parents, as distant relatives, we don't affirm children and young girls based on what their body looks or does not look like. There are better ways to appreciate children. And don't come into the midst of young girls and say, oh, that one is really beautiful. You know, so
oh
you're saying
in the midst
of five young girls, five teenagers, you point at one and say that this one is really beautiful. Her nose is this, her lips are this. When you know that 1% of the population all over the world can't even be like that.
Yeah.
You know, and then even in churches, when we are supposed to have a presentation, they would always go for the one who looks like media pretty to be the one that will present us. And I know that what we're saying eventually is health. We should pursue health promotion for people of all sizes, because when people change their health behaviors and stop being stigmatized by what their bodies look like, they are actually more inclined to pursue health and take care of their well-being much more than when you do it as a form of punishment or stigmatization. You don't give people access that way. So please, I will like to appeal to each and every one of us, because even when some men stigmatize women based on their size or what they look like, I don't think they do this because they just want to do it. It's because that's how they grew up. That's what they've been taught. So we're not just teaching our young girls. We're also teaching our young boys. We're also saying, let's change this narrative. Don't be the one who is fueling the stigmatization. Don't be the one who is, because these things, we'll talk about this in the future, but these things lead to eating disorders. People are not talking about it, but we need to start having these conversations, because I believe they are conversations that we don't have that are worth having. So Neka, what are your final words?
I want to say that we should remember that fat people also suffer eating disorders. It's not just thin people who have eating disorders.
Yes.
And we should remember that people who are fat or people who are big, and as well as people who are skinny and thin, they all have emotions. And yes. I'm sure that in the privacy of their rooms, they're already suffering. They're already looking at themselves in the mirror and wondering, oh, how can I change this, my body part? What can I do? And low already themselves. Please don't add to that. Don't add to how they are feeling. They already know. They already know that, you know.
This is what I look like.
Yes. They already know what the society thinks they should look like. Mm-hmm. They already have their, they are probably already suffering. You know, don't act, don't swell it. You know, if you have to make comments as their healthcare provider, you know, specifically as a healthcare provider or as someone who loves them, please come from a place of kindness, come from a place of love. Do you understand? Or keep short, check your words. Don't tell people things that they have to turn over their beds all through the night, and then the next thing, they don't want to face the world. Don't be that person to make life more difficult for any other person.
And those involved in the movie industry, I plead with you, please. People in bigger bodies are not dumb, are not lazy, are not meant to be for caricature roles. That's not what they were created for. Remember that once upon a time, these bigger bodies were also being celebrated as affluent. Remember that there's something called body diversity and that we can't all be a size 6. I hope that was really, really insightful for you as it was for me. I find that every time I listen to this podcast, to be honest with you, I've listened to it like three or four times, mostly because I'm listening to what I'm putting out there and I'm very conscious of the fact that this is really, really going to shake the tables. And I'm encouraged that I'm doing this. I'm glad that I was able to do this. And I hope that it's been very insightful for you. I want you to do me a favor. Go ahead and leave a review. If you're listening on iTunes, leave a review on iTunes. If you're listening on Anchor, leave a review on Anchor. Share this with your friends. Start a conversation using the hashtag Beyond the Dress Size. I would encourage you to take time to reflect on this over the weekend. Listen again if you need to, and most importantly, forgive yourself. Remember, the goal here is love and acceptance, and forgiving yourself is the best route to go. Don't blame yourself for anything you did in the past. You have only acted as you know how. And then for people who you think had offended you with the way they spoke negatively about you, I want you to also go ahead and open up your heart to forgiveness. If you are the type who enjoys journaling, go ahead and journal your feelings as you listen to this episode. And remember that most of us have acted out in the way we know because of our societal constructs and what society has fed us. So you and I have a corporate social responsibility to change the narrative, to feed our young ones with the right narrative. If you would like to book a call with me or ask a question, go ahead and send me an email at info@zinislifestyle.com. Remember that Zini's Lifestyle is one word. Head over to the webpage for this podcast. It is zinislifestyle.com/size6 to get the relevant resources that I promised to share for this episode. You would also get our favorite images. You can download them, upload them to your social media pages, and also start a conversation with your friends. I want you to share this podcast. I want us to keep the conversation going even after now, because this is just the beginning. Trust me, this is just the beginning. We haven't even, you know, shaken this table as much as would love to. Don't forget to join us in the Facebook group. It's Healthy Yummy Mummies. And give me a shout out on @Zini's Lifestyle. I want to know what you really enjoyed
about this podcast, I want to know what your aha moments were. Remember that the goal is to promote health for people of all sizes, that we stop pursuing the number on the scale, but start thinking about how to live healthier, happier, fruitful lives. And most importantly, that you own your body, love it, and live in it fabulously. All right, I can't wait to bring you the next episode. I'll speak to you soon. Take care. Bye.